Okay, welcome everybody to Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 155. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, back from Georgia. And very glad to have with me here the site director, Jonathan Lindemann.
What it do?
Dear Lord.
Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And James Jones just got home from work.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Yes. All right. We're so happy to have them here, and we're so happy that you are listening to our mad ramblings. So before we get started, as usual, I want to give some props to these guys for really holding down the fort last week. They did an awesome job. I really had a blast listening to the last episode. And I also want to say Matt was really good. And as far as I'm concerned, he's welcome back here anytime. I'd love to chat with him on the show. And
he's great.
He was great, especially for a first-timer. Very, very natural guy. So it was a good show, really funny. There were a lot of parts where I thought, man, I wish I was there so I could say this thing. And especially on the part where you guys were talking about your top three games, because I heard some really good ones, but nobody said Chrono Trigger. And
yeah, we got called out.
That is a matter of public record as one of your favorites already, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have referred to it as the funnest game and the best game on this show.
I hate that word.
it's really hard for me. It would absolutely be in my top three. I mean, it very may well be my very favorite game ever.
And your last review for the site as well.
It was, yes, and that was intentional.
Going out on high.
Yeah, that's right. After that, he just handed it in, and he just went right off into the sunset. It was amazing.
Yeah, well, that was hardly the end of my working days at the site, though. Yeah, actually, as we roll into new business here, I'll just segue into it and say that one of the things I've been doing a lot of this week since I got back from my trip, actually even during my trip, is editing. We've had some minor changes in the staff makeup lately, and just beginning so far behind, I said, hey, I'll help out with some editing, and man, that is time-consuming and mentally taxing. So hopefully really soon here going to be sort of training some people to do more of that and help take the load off of me. And eventually I'd like to retire from that as well.
Just when you thought you were out, it pulled
you
back
in. Keep getting sucked back in. Anyway, so in terms of games, two weeks ago, last time I was on the show, I mentioned that I'd picked up Bangaio Spirits on DS, which is a favorite game of John and Greg. James, have you played this?
I've played it. I don't own it.
Okay. I played it very, very briefly at E3, I guess last year, and didn't understand it at all. I mean, I probably played it for 2 minutes and had no idea what was going on. And after I bought it and finally put it in the system and started playing it, I had the same feeling for the first hour or two. Man, Bangaio is so crazy. It's so chaotic and really pretty complicated that it took me 2 or 3 hours before I really felt like I understood what the weapons did and how to select the proper one for that stage and, you know, how to move the character around and fire in the direction that you want to and stuff like that. It's quite a barrier of entry.
Yeah, it does not go out of its way to try to, you know, slowly push somebody into it. It's like, okay, well, here's everything you can do and have fun. I mean, it's a sandbox game.
Yeah, there is no learning curve at all.
It's just a mountain.
the levels are a sort of XY scatter plot, not a curve with no discernible correlation.
Yeah, I remember
kind.
You mentioning this when you started playing it, in that level A could be rather simple, and then level B could be...
Yeah, I mean, it eschews traditional structures and incentives completely. So, yeah, and there's good and bad things to that, but especially considering it's very complicated in terms of the gameplay, especially for just D-pad and buttons, which is kind of trying to overcome some of the limitations that has when you've got a lot of omnidirectional stuff going on. It could have used with a more structured introduction, but if you can get past it, I think there's lots to enjoy.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is it has like 17 tutorials, and you know, they're all really quick. They're not like
WarioWare micro games, as I remember.
Yeah, they really are. A lot of them are over in 2 or 3 seconds, which means you don't really have time to learn what they're trying to teach you. So I think the problem with the tutorials is they explain things. The tutorials are all about, you know, here are the controls, here's what this weapon does, here's what this weapon does. but it doesn't really tell you the point of the game.
No.
Like, it took me a while before I realized, like, what is the goal here? I mean, if it throws me in a level, am I supposed to kill everything? You know, and then I realized there are these targets that sometimes it's better to just avoid a lot of stuff and just go after the target. And why is this one guy reflecting all my shots? How am I supposed to deal with that? The game, like, it's... The tutorials are hilarious because the first 15 or like all but the last one are really ultra simple in that they'll give you like one weapon, they'll introduce you to one weapon and say, okay, break, it breaks through the enemy's shots. And you're like, why is that good? It seems like all the weapons break through the enemy's shots. And then it throws you in this super easy stage where you don't really need to use the weapon that's being highlighted to beat it.
It's true.
So, in fact, in some cases, you might actually beat the level accidentally, the tutorial.
Yeah, it's true. Mm-hmm. And it happened so quickly.
Yeah. So, and then you get to the last tutorial, and there's like 10 minutes of text before it even starts where they explain everything else in the game, including a full rundown of the level editor and all of these weird interactions with different types of enemies. And, you know, if you're standing next to a cannon, it won't shoot you. And if you're dashing into a guy, he can still hurt you with melee attacks. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
It feels rather begrudging, really, doesn't it, actually?
That there's a tutorial at all? Yeah.
They just sort of did a dump at some point. Not literally.
Well, you know, I found that it did me a lot more good to play the game for a few hours and then go back to the tutorials and use them almost like an instruction manual to look up a particular detail about a certain kind of weapon or a certain kind of enemy.
Well,
because
you know, I find that I do that with most games, but but with this one, I felt like I kind of like that was really the only way to do it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, this is the first game I can remember where I didn't understand all the like meters and numbers on the screen because the tutorials completely ignore those. So they don't explain that this bar is your life, and this other bar is your EX meter. And it fills up when you take damage and when you eat fruit, and why is there fruit all over the place? And there's so much stuff on the screen that just really isn't explained, and you just kind of have to experience it and like start to piece together all the clues.
It's a very natural thing for someone like me who is an old import gamer, because that's what I did.
Right, but it's in English, and you actually have to play it kind of like an
import game.
You
still have to
game.
Do it like that, yeah. It was funny, because I mean, I played this predominantly on an airplane as well, because I was going to the convention in Denver, so I guess when it's like, of course I'm going to do this is easily going to be more entertaining than whatever other options are available, you're going to stick with it, and you're going to keep playing, and you're going to keep experimenting until you know, you can get your head wrapped around it. But I think for other people, I could see it being quite a barrier.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't a barrier, but it was a steep hill to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad that I stuck with the game, because like I said, it took 2 or 3 hours before I really felt like I could even understand what was going on. But once I did, I started to really get into it, and I just found that I kept playing it just more and more and more, and I really couldn't put it down. And that's one of the nice things about the level structures. The levels tend to go by pretty fast, and so it's just really easy to just jump into another one, you know, just one more.
Mm-hmm.
And the game's really addictive, and I've had a fantastic time with it. But it actually makes me really curious to go back and play the original Bangaio for N64.
That's quite a lot more traditional in terms of the structure of the game, and you know, it has bosses and you know, much more like what you would think of normally.
But the mechanics are still there in terms of, I think
for the most part, yeah.
You know, that would be a fantastic Virtual Console import title.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I guess the problem remains that if it was originally a third-party publisher, we've still yet to get that on the N64 in any region.
But, I mean, this is a game that I would seriously track down a cartridge of it if I could. I've still got my adapter somewhere. I think it's at my sister's
place. Well, that's the thing. I would assume you'd be far more easy in terms of the game to get the Dreamcast version, because it was far
more numerous.
But I don't
have a Dreamcast.
Yeah, well, precisely.
I don't know, but I do really want to try it sometime. I hope sometime in my life I get to play the original Bangaio, because I really like Spirits a lot more than I thought I would, honestly. I mainly bought it because of what you guys said and because it was cheap. I didn't really think I'd like it, but I thought it's okay if I don't like it that much. It'll keep me occupied for a few days, and it's kept me occupied for about 2 weeks now. So, yeah, I've played it pretty heavily. Better move on, though. I rented Ninja Gaiden Black for Xbox.
So have you hated yourself yet or hated the game?
No, I mean, it is a very challenging game.
Yes.
No doubt. And I've gone to GameFAQs a couple times to get me through a couple places. I'm not even that far into it. I mean, it's hard pretty much from the beginning. But it's the kind of game that I really like. And, you know, I was a fan of Ninja Gaiden on NES, and this really doesn't feel very much like the old NES game. But it does feel a lot like Devil May Cry, God of War, that kind of stuff. And, of course, it was before God of War when they made the original version of it. Black is kind of the it's kind of like the director's cut of Ninja Gaiden, I think. Mm-hmm. It came out towards the end of the Xbox, the original Xbox. And it's backwards compatible on 360, which is how I'm finally getting to play it. This was a game I wanted to play for years, and just, you know, I didn't have an Xbox, so I never was able to, and through the magic of backwards compatibility, I can finally check it out, and I do really like it. I mean, it's right up my alley. And it's funny, because when I first put this on my Gamefly queue, we didn't know about Metroid Other M and the whole Team Ninja Nintendo connection.
Right.
So it's kind of an accidental research project as well, because now I'm getting to, you know, understand maybe... You know, I'm trying to extract some hints about what Metroid might control like, or what it might, you know, how it might be pieced together, being developed by these guys. And, you know, Ninja Gaiden Black is not Metroid like in its quality. It's not that polished, but I can definitely see that, you know, the smoothness of the movement, the way the levels are designed, is not up to snuff for Metroid, but it is definitely a lot more interesting than, say, Devil May Cry, in that you have to explore the levels, and they're, you know, there's some platforming, they're put together pretty well, they're very sort of open-ended, you can go wherever you want to within the level, and you try to find the next place. So the partnership is starting to make more sense now that I've played this, and it's got me pretty excited, because I think, you know, with these guys' expertise in action games combined with Sakamoto's understanding of what makes Metroid Metroid, and then Nintendo overseeing the quality, which we've seen can make a pretty big difference with other developers, like in with Silicon Knights and Eternal Darkness and stuff like that. I mean, Nintendo having some oversight onto a project can make a pretty big difference. Yeah, I'm liking it so far. I'm not very far, and I'll be playing more of it. But anyway, real quickly. The new Xbox Live Arcade game, Splosion Man. I actually went ahead and bought this. I like it a lot. It's a platformer in which the only action you have is exploding yourself. And so that's how you jump. That's how you wall jump. That's how you attack enemies. That's how you solve puzzles. Everything, all the buttons explode you. That's all they do. And it's very cleverly designed. It has a really funny personality. The character is, he looks like he's on fire, basically. He looks like he's made of embers, I guess. But he's animated kind of like the Noid from Domino's commercials. I'm not sure. Like, he's very, or maybe a Rabid from the Rayman Raving Rabbids games. Mm. He's very strange animation. He does a lot of cartoony, childish motions as he runs around, and he talks to himself a lot. So it's very funny, a lot of personality, and it seems like one of the few Xbox Live games, Xbox Live Arcade games, or even Xbox games that I would say Nintendo fans should check out. Like, if you're really into Nintendo games, you should check this out, because it's actually kind of the kind of thing you would want to be on something like WiiWare, you know? I don't think there's any real hope of that happening. I think Microsoft actually has like a 12-month exclusive license on it to even keep it off of PlayStation 3, and I don't think it would fit on WiiWare. But it's very cool. If you have access to a 360, you might want to check out the demo of it. And finally, really quickly, I did look into a community game on Xbox called Nebulon. And it's one of the many Geometry Wars clones that you can find in the community games. But this one I actually bought for $2.50. And it's a very, very well done sort of, you know, spin-off of Geometry Wars. And it has some interesting differences, some of them frustrating, some of them really clever and good. And the graphics are amazing. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. I haven't played it a lot. I probably won't play it a lot. but I don't have to feel like I got my money's worth at that price. So it's really cool, actually. Greg, why don't you tell us what you've been playing?
Well, thanks to your generosity, Johnny, a lot of what I've been playing this week has been Retro Game Challenge, fitting in where I can on the train and whatnot. I've got pretty far into it, I guess. I've unlocked Guardia Quest. I think I've done the first challenge of that, so you'd be pretty far in. There's only one more game to unlock, if I'm correct. So yeah, so far I've really quite enjoyed it. The presentation, the sort of package around it, is quite endearing. All the little references and things like. I mean, one of my favourites is with Star Prince, which is the I suppose it's mostly sort of patterned on Star Force, the vertical shooter that's on VC Arcade. Right. It actually references getting you sort of quote unquote get a rapid fire joypad, which lets you press Y to not to do things like that. It's just really funny.
Yeah, Star Prince is actually really, really good. Like, that's one of my favourites.
Now, this is the thing about the packaging's good and it's endearing, and there's little references here and there, and there's a reference to the wizard in there for people that like that. But I mean, the thing about the actual games themselves is that, of course, they are quite, the whole point is that they're faithful to these eras that they're recreating in the sort of mid-80s. But in the case of Star Prince, there's a little sophistication there that's really quite good. Particularly the mechanic where you can hold down the trigger button to absorb shots, and then if you absorb three of them, it sends out this sort of omnidirectional attack that can take out everything and it could rack up your score very quickly, which is sort of useful for one of the challenges that you have to do for that game. That's much more thoughtful than was typical of the actual games that were released at that time. So in that sense, you get the nostalgia, but there's some intricacy and thoughtfulness that goes beyond just that, which I think is very valuable. And that is one of the games that I've played in free play as well, though I haven't dabbled in that too much yet. I mean, with the games that you unlocked, did you kind of go back to ones that you liked?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm spoiling anything to tell you that the final challenge of the game is to beat all the games.
Right, yeah.
And it for several of them, there are cheats that you find in the magazines that let you do that without really playing through 64 levels.
Like skip levels,
Cosmic
and
Gate. Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of skip levels. I think there's an invincibility code for Star Prince. There's a place in Guardia Quest where you can actually like find a secret staircase that lets you watch the credits anytime you want to, which basically triggers that you have beaten the game, even though you didn't even remotely come close to beating the game. But what I found is that the games that I really liked, I like Cosmic Gate because I'm a big Galaga fan.
The Galaga game, yeah.
That and Guardia Quest and Haggleman 3 and Star Prince, I actually played quite a bit of those even after I cheated to beat the final challenge. In fact, Guardia Quest, I still haven't completely beaten yet because it's quite long. There's so much stuff that's one of the very few gripes I have with Retro Game Challenges is the challenges themselves aren't all that well laid out. You know, like they don't really show you all the different cool parts of the game, and they're usually beaten very easily, and then it's not clear that there's all this more depth to the game that you can enjoy when you go back to it. Free play, a lot of times in a game like, say, like WarioWare, free play is really kind of a throwaway feature. It's like a sound test or something. It's like very few people will actually use something like that in most games. In Retro Game Challenge, free play is really the best part of the game. I mean, the challenges are kind of a survey. They're kind of like a tour of the content in the game. But going back and really playing them in free play is the real way that you get to experience the game. So you've only seen the tip of the iceberg so far.
Obviously, sort of derived from the TV show in Japan, the Game Center CX and all this. So it's not a bolt from the blue. But I would say that structure is quite a nice sort of excuse to have a sort of unifying thing going on with all these quite disparate games.
It is, absolutely. I think it could be done a lot better, but I agree with the concept. if not the execution of the challenges.
Yeah, I mean, but probably the biggest complaint I would have about some of the structure of the challenges so far is just that there's a particular one point where you get the racing game, that those challenges come very close together when they revisit it. I think it's the third, both the, essentially it's the third and the fifth game, because it doesn't really change in between.
Yeah. Yeah, that's poorly laid out.
That's a little close for me. That could probably have been spaced out better. It's not bad. I mean, I don't dislike that particular game, and even with it reappearing twice, I didn't find it overstayed its welcome. But Guardian Quest is interesting because I don't have any nostalgia for RPGs at the time. But it is still kind of charming that when I would go to a chest and I'd press A, and this is not opening. Why isn't it opening? And then it's like, oh no, I have to go to the look command to open a chest. It's like, these are games that I didn't play.
Well, in the original Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior, there was a stair option in the menu. And the only way to go up and down stairways is to go to the menu and select stair.
That was never annoying, by the way.
We've come a long way, baby.
When it came out, a buddy of mine who really wasn't, he was more of like a sports game player, but he was looking for something a little bit, you know, off the beaten path compared to what he normally played. And so he was looking at that game and he was like, you know, hey, you know, do you think this game would be good? And of course me, you know, at the time I was like hardcore kind of, you know, RPG guy. And I was like, yeah, it'll be amazing. And so he buys it and he goes home, plays it for like 3 or 4 hours, and he calls me up. He's like, man, this game sucks. He's like, it's so boring. He's like, I just walk around. It's so hard. Nothing happens. He's like, this game sucks. I don't even know if he ever beat it. I think he actually did beat it, but he's like, I'm never playing one of those games again. You just hated RPGs after that.
I wonder whether I would have had a similar reaction if I'd played 8-bit RPGs as a 7-year-old or whatever.
Probably.
It would have been. But I was definitely far more ready for them when I played something like Chrono Trigger, which is much easier as well, I'm sure, and much more accessible.
I remember playing the first Dragon Warrior, and I must have... I'm pretty sure I borrowed it because I didn't... The first RPG I owned was Dragon Warrior 2, which I got for my birthday or something. But I borrowed the first Dragon Warrior from a friend, and I was playing through it. I was decently far into it, I guess. And, you know, it's a long game, so I'm spending a lot of time up in my bedroom playing this. I think my parents starting to worry, you know, oh my God, what did we do? Why did we buy this kid a Nintendo? And so my dad comes up to kind of check on me. Hey, bud, what are you doing? You know, show your game to me. He's trying to take an interest at least. And
parents are so cute.
I show him what I'm doing, and I'm just grinding. And I'm just walking around in the mountains and fighting dudes, and I'm pretty low level, so like I had a couple magic spells, but I couldn't cast them very many times, so usually I just went into a battle and fought. I was playing very conservatively. And I decided that I needed to get up and go to the bathroom, but I could get Dad to play it for me while I walked off. So I give it to Dad. I say, here, Dad, try it. And he says, okay, what do I do? And I said, well, just walk around, and when you get into battle, just push the A button until it dies. And he's like, that's no fun. And he just, he wouldn't do it. I mean, he's like, what's the point? This isn't even a game. All you do is push the A button.
Yeah, RPGs are probably the most boring game for people to watch you play. You're like, this is so cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be up to level 25 in about an hour. And everybody's like, wow, this sucks. What are you doing?
Well, it depends. If it's a more recent Square RPG, watching you play is pretty much the same experience as playing it. So.
Yeah, it was a lot different back in the good old days. But yeah, it's weird because the appeal of RPGs lies on a very deep psychological level.
An accumulation.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not either playing it yourself or really invested in it, you know, like talking a lot about what's going on, if you really understand the system and the experience points and things like that, you might be able to watch it and be not entertained, but drawn into it. I don't know. For me, it's almost like playing Dragon Ball Z. You know, you're always seeing the characters get a little stronger, and they talk about how they're getting a little stronger, even if you can't see it. And so it's just this building excitement of, oh my God, what's going
to
happen when they finally fight?
Yeah, well, you know, the enjoyment of the game is spread out over a long period of time, so you can't just take a snapshot and kind of get enjoyment out of it, really.
Exactly.
Just as a spectator.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons that RPGs are notoriously difficult to show at E3 and things like that.
Yeah.
So, Greg, I'm looking forward to hear what you have to say about Retro Game Challenge next week, because you're getting to the best part now.
Yeah, it's going to go on for quite a lot longer, I think, for sure. It's just it is a really nice handheld game, or it certainly has been in terms of just, you know, because these challenges have been quite bite-sized and things, but I kind of look forward to getting into it a bit more in depth as well.
The biggest departure of Guardia Quest from the real old 8-bit RPGs is that you can save anywhere, which is really nice for a portable. Yeah. Even in the middle of a dungeon, you can save.
No, that is very nice. And the other thing I did get today is Wii Sports Resort, the retail game. So that's now, I've got the two motion pluses and everything, so I'm pretty well kitted out for the future. And I've just played, you know, dabbled in pretty much all the games, and having played it before at the Nintendo event in London and all that sort of thing, it's nothing unexpected, but definitely seems to be delivering what you'd hope. A lot of the games I do like, definitely the sword fighting is a lot of fun. I've been trying out the showdown mode, which is the sort of the brawler style, which is fun. I mean, it's just something intrinsically amusing about a bunch of Miis walking towards you, just smash all their legs out from under them.
Yes.
They all fall. And you can even sort of like raise it up and sort of bash them on top of the head with the hilt of your sword, which is just kind of fun. Every now and again, there'll be one sort of witless one that walks towards you, completely defenseless, and you could just go, dunk, and that's the end of it.
See, that mode, when they first explained it, it sounded really, very, very repetitive to me. Like, it wouldn't be fun for more than just a couple minutes. And I hear more and more positive comments about it.
The stages are short, that I've played at least. I've sort of played the first four or five. And so they don't last very long, and I don't really think that they could necessarily last all that long. Some of the fun is just over swinging, which would get you tired pretty quickly. They'll kind of surround you, and they'll generally just attack you one at a time. And, you know, a lot of them are pretty totally witless, and then you've got the odd one that's got sort of more armor on, so you might want to let him attack you, and then if you block his attack, then he'll be vulnerable and you can dispose of him and things like that. So, I mean, I haven't played all the stages yet. I mean, they may well get getting more sophisticated, more difficult. But it's just fun. I mean, you know, it's good sort of
fun. It gives me hope
for
things like, Red Steel 2 and the new Zelda, because obviously the swordplay is going to be leveraged.
It's fun swinging it around. It's fun, you know, seeing, like, it is very, very simple, but it is fun seeing, like, okay, well, this guy, you know, he's trying to block this way, I can get in under that, and just, you know, that very direct translation of your hands, you know, swinging from low to high and doing it and then picking him off.
See,
like that.
I feel like that's actually going to show it better than just playing like a one-on-one in that game, because when I played it, it was really just like swing as fast as I can and hope to knock the other person off the platform.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, the one-on-ones can be like that, you know what I mean? But, I mean, on the other hand, I mean, they can also be like, if someone manages to kind of block once, then that can be the end of it, because then they're vulnerable and then you just go nuts on them, you know? So it's kind of, it's weird that, but I know what you mean, because it's just a little more extended.
Yeah.
But not that much extended. I haven't had any calibration issues yet either. For the record, so I mean, that it doesn't seem like it's a huge problem. I'm sure it probably will be something of an issue from here and there, but just as yet, nothing major to report. The other things I've kind of messed around with, the table tennis, definitely really, really well executed. It's so natural. I mean, it's very natural. It's so much more natural than Wii Sports Tennis was, in the sense of, it always felt like it was a little idiosyncratic because it was cheating things. With that, you know, because it didn't have the range of motion sensing that it does now, and so and of course it's a simpler game because it's table tennis, so it's kind of the motion sensors come forward and the games come back, and so what you've got is something that just feels very, very close and very natural, and that works really well. And the other thing I dabbled quite a bit in was the air stuff. Just flying around with the plane, and I mean, it's so you get 5 minutes, and your idea is just to explore the island and find these little landmark points, as many as you can, and kind of like filling out a little index of all the island, the Woohoo or whatever it's called, islands, notable spots. And yeah, I like the whole idea of the island, the to give it a sense of place. I think that's kind of neat, if not terribly consequential, but. The flying is kind of fun, but I mean, the thing is, there's no real physics to it, if you know what I mean. Well, not much, in the sense that, you know, if you initiate a full-on nosedive, it's very easy to pull out of that. You pretty much just pull the controller out and you're pulling it out. In terms of, you know, does it show what a pilot wings could be? Like, well, no, because the control, in fact, is too direct, because it is as easy to pull the plane up out of it as it is to just flick the controller up, which, of course, should not be the case in a kind of flight sim kind of game. So it's definitely a sort of neat inclusion, but... it would be interesting to see how that you could balance that if he was doing a Pilot Wings game, in terms of, you know, making it feel natural with the Wii Motion Plus, but at the same time actually somewhat realistic with what a plane should handle like.
Well, I didn't test this at E3 because I felt like it would have been bad form. But if you nosedive it straight into the ground, what happens?
If you nosedive it, your Mii parachutes out.
Nice.
So far, it looks, I mean, clearly, this is lasting appeal-wise, you know, it's all about the multiplayer, so that's what I'm looking at down the road. But for now, it's just kind of cool to dabble in everything, and I'm sure as time goes on, it's just going to get pared down to a kind of select few. I mean, there are some that feel kind of throwaway. I don't know about the basketball. It seems like it could be all right, but it doesn't, the Motion Plus part of it isn't hitting me.
Yeah.
It's just, it's so flicky, it just seems like the old way of doing things.
You say that, and I felt that way too, but then I actually watched somebody play it who was doing the whole shooting motion, and they were actually really, really doing really well.
And I mean, in my limited experience, and it is quite limited, it just seemed to be mostly timing based.
Yeah, but I mean, timing is a lot in shooting too. I mean,
it seems like something where you wouldn't be able to really put too much finesse on it. It's like, it's not really a finesse action. It's just more of a.
But you know, but other than timing, the only other thing I could see was a sort of boom blocks ish sort of thing. You know, if you flicked it too hard, if there was too, but then it wouldn't go on the right trajectory and it would go underneath the basket, for instance. Which again, like boom blocks, you could have done that before. So I'm not sure how much is using that one, but it's still fun. It's just not as, you know, demonstrative of what the Motion Plus could do.
I think that one was a little underthought, because there are ways in which you can put finesse into a shot. I mean, obviously.
I would have thought so. Yeah, absolutely.
But I just don't think they did it particularly well. But at the same time, you know, I did see somebody who was just, I mean, he was perfect, because his entire motion mimicked perfectly what you would expect to see someone who was shooting.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I couldn't do it. I was rimming out on almost every shot, but but then again, that does map pretty well to reality.
Yeah. Motion Plus, 1-to-1.
I am not a 3-point specialist, let's put it that way.
Damn, I had you on my fantasy team too.
I'm more of a power forward, as Johnny can attest. Take it to the rim.
So, John.
Oh, man.
John, yes. I hear you're playing the best game in the world.
Yeah, yep, I'm playing Pulse Man. Whoa, hey-o! no, I see there are certain games that I feel are big cavernous holes in my game-playing career.
You're not the only one who thinks those are big holes yes. in career.
In fact, you might be the person who thinks it the least.
Yeah, so part of my summer project is playing three games that, you know, I haven't really played for various reasons. Those games being Chrono Trigger, Super Mario Galaxy, and Super Mario Brothers 3. All of them I've played kind of sparingly. Chrono Trigger, I originally rented it, I think actually on one weekend, way back in probably 95, it would have been. I rented Chrono Trigger and Super Mario RPG from Blockbuster.
Oh, it would have had to be 96.
At the same time.
At the same time, exactly. That's exactly why I didn't.
What were you thinking?
Like, you were crazy ambitious.
Yeah, that's the thing. And actually, Super Mario RPG wound up taking me about 4 or 5 days. But I mean, those are like, you know, 12-hour days where I would get up at 10 in the morning and play until 2 in the morning kind of thing. So after that, I was like, I do not want to play another RPG. And so really all I had experienced of Chrono Trigger was the title screen.
the pendulum.
Which is really good.
But that's it.
Did you watch the attract sequence? Because it's very good.
Yeah, I probably did. Because what happened was, I remember I put that in first, and I said, well, let's check out Super Mario RPG, because I was trying to decide which one I wanted to play. And I was like, well, you know, what the heck, I'll play Super Mario RPG and see how that goes. And then I just got completely sucked into it. And then Chrono Trigger, you know, by that time I was like, well, I'll rent this some other time. That other time never came.
So are you now playing it on DS?
Yeah, I'm playing it on DS, and I'm wondering if that's going to impact my perception of it a bit. I mean, Johnny,
I don't think it will, but you're not using touch controls, are you?
No.
Cuz that will impact
you. No. I'm trying to avoid that at all costs.
Yeah,
the touch controls are just really, they're kind of weird to me. They don't really, especially for controlling your character. It just seems really strange. So, you know, that was one of the first things. I turned that off right away, needless to say. But yeah, so I'm about probably 3 hours into it, I think. I'm right at the point where I just went back in time. And so, you know, I've...
For the first time. John, what the fuck did you do for three hours?
Yeah, that can't be true.
I can go back in time in less than 2 minutes from hitting start.
I talked to everybody. That's the thing. I talked to every character.
All right, so that accounts for the first 30 minutes.
And, you know, it just sounds better the fourth time they say it.
Well, let's open up the game and see actually where I am.
Well, John, I mean, all I can say is Chrono Trigger is going to be the best 300 hours of your life. Yeah. You're really going to love it.
Yep, 255 in, baby. I'm actually at the point where you first talk to the princess.
I think you're joking with us. No, anyway, so you like the music, right?
Yes.
Well, he's only got made it to the fairs.
Yeah, the music is good. I'm moving on to Pulse Man. So, Pulse Man, it's Game Freak. It reminds me a lot of Drill Dozer.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, I mean, in terms of art style. But
yes,
this game got supposedly really well reviewed, right? I mean, it has like a really good rep or something.
Oh yeah, no, it's
and
good.
And Greg
really
liked it.
I've played it nearly to completion, and it is quite good. How much have you played of it, John?
Oh, just a very little bit. But I mean, I expected to kind of be, you know, wowed right from the start with all the good things I've heard about it.
Well, that's not necessarily true about anything that it's going to start well, even if it's good overall. But I wouldn't say certainly the first level feels a little aimless.
Yeah.
Obviously trying to sort of ease you in, but it could have done it a lot better. It could have done with probably being a bit compacted.
It's action!
And I wouldn't say that, I mean, the level design is probably not his strongest suit throughout the entire game. I mean, certainly there was a level later on, which was sort of like a maze that was just kind of, it didn't work for me at all. But, I mean, it certainly does get more interesting, and there's a bifurcation in the game structure where after three levels where you sort of pick somewhat Mega Man-ish, there's another three levels, and at that point it changes because water is introduced, which sort of depowers Pulse Man.
Yeah.
And so there's this sort of significant change in the level design from that point and thing. So it definitely gets much more interesting as it goes on.
Yeah, I really...
I'll have to play to at least that point.
I enjoyed Pulse Man, but I haven't played in a pretty long time, but I agree with Greg. I remember it starting a little...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that it's truly outstanding. I would say, you know, it's one of the games from the time that's sort of on the good to very good side.
Yeah.
And the difference being that most of those games from that time we are kind of familiar with, whereas this one we're not, because it was limited to Japan. So it's a kind of, you know, one of the classic kind of hidden gem sort of things, but it doesn't automatically make it absolutely brilliant.
No.
But it's very much
I'd rather play Ninja Spirit.
You're wrong. You're just plain wrong.
I downloaded it too, and my first impression was it feels like Sonic. And
yeah,
that's not a good first impression from my point of view.
Yeah, it's very
Sonic-like.
Just
the controls are very slippery, and the way he accelerates, mm-hmm. and the level designs are kind of like that, and it just... But I will say, I couldn't beat the boss of the first level. I couldn't figure out how to damage him, but I did beat the boss of the second level, and I had fun with that. So my feeling about it is improving, but I need to play more of it.
Yeah, I feel like the game grew on me, but I always thought it was a really fun title.
I agree. And I mean, as it goes on, it gets more about zipping around of that ball.
Yeah.
The sort of electricity ball, rather than the walking so much.
Now, is there at any point can you control where the ball goes yourself?
Well, no, it's more just a case of where you start. Isn't it?
It goes where it goes.
You know it's going to go off at a 45 degree angle from where you initiate it.
Yeah.
So it's to that extent, you know, the predictability of it.
No, the one interesting thing playing Pulse Man, though, is it just me, or does, you know, talking about, I mean, with Chrono Trigger, I mentioned how I really like the music, but with Pulse Man, it just seems like even the music in Pulse Man sounds like the music from the Sonic games.
But the Genesis music was so homogeneous.
Yeah, I mean, it really was.
They all sound the same.
And part of it's because it's what the Genesis could do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were sort of at the whim of the system.
It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter whether it's bloody Moonwalker or, you know, Streets of Rage. It all sounds the same.
Yeah, it has like this kind of like tinny sort of narrow,
FM synth that it had was just, you know, very unmistakable sound. And, yeah, I mean, the compositions obviously are not all created equal. But you can't help but you hear one, you think of them all.
The sound quality is very much the same throughout.
I mean, comparing like the music in Chrono Trigger to Pulse Man, it's a laugh. You know, I mean, in Chrono Trigger, it's like, you know, there's music in there. The funniest thing about that game is how there's just like, there's musical tracks in it that just, there's really no purpose to them. It's just like you walk up to somebody and they say, here, I'll play you a track. And they just play you a track and you sit there and listen to the track. And that's it.
Yeah, and it's pretty. It's nice. It sounds good.
You could get away with it on the Super NES because it did sound so good, especially at the time. Mm-hmm. People just, you know, it was incredible.
I think it still sounds good.
Yeah, it does. You know, it does. But at the time, it wasn't just that it sounded good. It was that it was impressive. It was like, oh my God, this is coming out of a video game.
Yeah especially, versus what we're used to, which is...
Especially like Castlevania 4 in early 91 or whatever. It's like, this shouldn't be possible. What's going on here? You know?
Greg was in denial. This can't be happening!
It's so good. It's so incredible, especially compared to Genesis.
Let's see, the last game is California Games for the C64. Good old Commodore 64, baby. You know, I gotta download every single one of those.
gotta get them all.
Yeah, well, everybody now has to, you know, walk away so they can't hear what I say. So that's a tradition.
John C64 Game of the Week.
Everybody put down their headsets. We can't react to what he's saying.
John, just answer me this. Did this game come out after I was born?
When were you born?
86.
No way. I don't think so. I don't think so, man.
Let's go look this bitch up. Oh, 87! Yes!
87, yeah.
Technically alive when this game came out.
Like, of all the Epics like game series, the ones that probably came before little James Jones entered the world were probably like Summer Games 2. Winter Games.
I've played California Games even though I've never touched a Commodore 64. Because I played it on NES, and I really liked it. We used to rent it a lot on NES, and we'd get a group of people and sit around and pass the controller for hours.
Yeah, it's six events, and it's, you know, it's weird because the one thing that's, you know, kind of carrying through with this theme of music is I really loved the music for California Games on the Commodore 64, and the Commodore 64 had a specific sound chip as well, so all of the games on it have a specific sound that I really like, so... When I went on YouTube, I checked out what it was like on the NES, and I'm like, that music just doesn't really cut it for me. So, but I mean, the gameplay is exactly the same. However, I will say, like, how are the controls? Like, I know because there's surfing, like half pipe skateboarding, roller skating, hacky sack. If anybody even remembers what the hell hacky sacking is.
Foot bag is the only one that I really, really loved and was pretty good at.
Yeah.
And I remember roller skating a little bit. I remember it being very difficult, but foot bag was everybody's favorite.
Yeah. See, the one I really liked. I really liked surfing and BMX also. But the thing is, like, what were the controls like? Do you remember how you controlled, especially BMX? Because I found, like...
Yeah, I don't.
Well, the thing is, the reason why I bring that up is because the Commodore 64 version is entirely built around, like, the kind of Atari 2600, you know, joystick with one button. And so all of the controls, like in BMX, the way that you move your bike forward is by constantly tapping right on the D-pad. And doing that on the D-pad is so annoying.
Wait, so you don't get the hold. Do you have to tap?
Yeah. And all of the events are like that, like the ones that require that. So in order to simulate you know, turning the pedals of your bike, you tap right. And that's when you move along. And so doing that in BMX it's fine with like, you know, your Wico bat joystick, but with a D-pad, it's a pain in the ass. So I'm sure they definitely changed that up when they moved it to NES because it's really not meant for D-pad control.
Yeah, I really don't remember.
Yeah. You know, once you learn the controls, it's really good. And it's actually, it's quite addictive as well. So, you know, it's like any of these other Commodore 64 games. It's like the controls, because they aren't meant for D-pad, there's like a pretty steep learning curve. But once you master it, California Games is a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
You know, California Games makes me think of another game that I really, really love called TNC Surf Design.
Uh-huh. For the NES.
Have you guys ever heard of this or played it?
I can't say as I have.
Haven't played it, heard of it, though. It's the one where, aren't you a surfing gorilla?
Okay, I'm already interested. More details now.
But the surfing is, like, I don't know. My sister used to like the surfing, but I never did like the surfing. There's surfing and there's skateboarding, and the skateboarding is what I really, really, really loved. And you played as this guy called Joe Cool.
Nice.
And
how original.
God, he was so cool. And
he really was so cool.
And he pushed around on the I don't even know what to compare it to. It was really kind of a strange game, but so much fun. It had this really cool level design, and there was a trick to jumping off ramps that wasn't explained very well. It wasn't explained at all. You just kind of had to figure out how to do it. But once you did it, it became this amazing time trial thing where you're just trying to get as far as you can before time runs out. It's freaking awesome. All right. And James, we saved the best for last.
Oh, no. Yeah. We saved great for this one.
You know, Greg is playing the new hotness with Wii Sports Resort. John is playing the best game ever with Chrono Trigger. And you have.
I have.
Even better.
I have Heracles Chariot Racing, which the title should basically tell you everything you need to know about this game.
Well, it is a PS2 game. Put on WiiWare.
This is the company that brought us the Kokoto blank blank games. And basically it's exactly what I've always expected their games probably play like. So, you know, it looks decent for a WiiWare title. It's PS2 game, so it damn well better. But it plays unfun.
It plays unfun.
So hold on, we're gonna have to change our review process for that. Yeah. That's gonna be a special score.
Well, John, did you ever get the We Speak channel mail I sent you about this game?
No.
basically, right after you sent it to me, played it for about an hour. So I was probably up till about 2 a.m. playing it. And I basically recorded my immediate reaction, which was, this game is more unfair than even the worst parts of The Conduit.
Well, I'm sure even if John had got that message, he probably wouldn't have been able to understand it, the sound quality.
It would have sounded like I was in a fishbowl.
But
rest assured that my ridiculous-looking me would have been staring at you while...
Your me is pretty ridiculous-looking, John.
It is ridiculous.
No, really? I've not seen this.
We'll arrange for such an event to occur. But basically, indeed, the game is... So I played it on normal difficulty, and I could not win. I just couldn't. I mean, it felt like the turns are so... There's so many bendy turns, and your cart does not turn that way. Even from almost a dead stop with the best handling cart in the game, I couldn't complete a turn. I would go flying off into the abyss every time.
It sounds like you don't know how to play this
well,
game.
Well, I figured that the only way you can get through them is the tilt control, even when you're at a dead stop. So I had to use the tilting nunchuck in conjunction with the nunchuck analog stick to get around these turns.
So it mixes the two. That's
so you have to do both. But even doing that, I'm not handling these turns nearly as well as the AI is, who is going through them at top speed like nothing ever is going to happen to them. And basically, on normal mode, it's very difficult to win a race. It's one of the hardest kart games I've played. On easy mode, you can win them most of the time, but you're going to be challenged. On hard mode, it's literally like the 13th effort of Hercules. It is unbelievable. I was like, no, this can't be right. I can't be this terrible at video games. And the only thing I could discern is that this game must be brutally unforgiving. And in fact, after playing it for a few more hours, it is. And it's not even just because the game is hard. It's because everything conspires to make this game harder than it needs to be. Including even the art design does it, with colors that are the same, like the whole level is the same color. The course, the sky, the wall. So you're like, oh, this must be the turn. Oh, that's a wall. God damn it.
I think you're just pouty.
Oh, yeah.
James Pouty?
You picked up on this at last after so long.
It's subtle, I will admit.
Yeah, I do.
Is Kokoto in the game?
No, he's not. He should be, but he isn't. Instead, I get characters like the Minotaur, Poseidon, and a half-woman, half-bee.
All noted characters in Greek mythology.
The last one, I don't understand, except for every time she passes me, which she inevitably does, I get greeted with her taunting by a buzzing sound that's really irritating. but the funny, just a funny thing to note about the sound is that where most kart racing games, you know, they play dramatic music on the last lap, this game made the daring decision to play no music during the last lap, just cutting it off. So all you get is this, the kind of sound of your kart moving along the track, because usually at this point you're either so far ahead or so far behind, it doesn't matter. So you get this for like a whole lap.
It's awesome. Super dramatic.
It's suspense.
It's so weird.
All right.
There's no reason to buy this game. So just go buy it.
There's no reason to talk
just
about
go buy
it.
Mario Kart 64. Just do it. Honestly.
Okay. Now we're gonna take a break and come back with your listener mail.
What?
Welcome back. It's time for listener mail, and these are people who wrote into rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. We'll talk about anything, people. Keep them coming. questions,
don't
comments.
Open the door like that unless you're
praise
ready for
and damnation,
result.
Fire and brimstone.
Hallelujah.
Whatever you want. So the first letter is from Eric, who writes, I am currently finishing up Final Fantasy IV on the DS. Would there be a chance in hell that FF4 The After Years will come to DSiWare anytime soon?
I doubt it.
I'm not exactly sure. I would hope that you own a Wii, and if you do, I would say, you know, if you're interested in The After Years, go ahead and get it on WiiWare, because if they do ever bring it out on DS or DSiWare, it's probably not going to be any cheaper.
No. It is a little bit closer to the format in which the game was created, though, as a cell phone title, which would be kind of funny.
Right. But, I mean, it would still be just as discontinuous, I think, with the DS remake of Final Fantasy IV, because it still looks like a Super Nintendo game on any platform, and they're not going to change that.
I think maybe it'd just be more convenient to be able to walk around with it for some people.
Sure. Oh, yeah, I can see that. But I kind of doubt that it's coming to DSiWare just because of file size limitations and things like that. And I'm not sure that DSiWare has a demonstrated capability of doing DLC. Are you guys aware of anything?
I can't think of any.
Because that's really what The After Years is all about.
They could really just restructure it so each stage is its own freestanding title, and it wouldn't really be DLC anymore, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a question of whether that's feasible within the file size limit, you know, if the
I understand that. And it would probably, even if it was, it'd probably kill your DSi's memory right off the bat.
I'm sure it would. I think it's more likely that they could, you know, do a collection of all of them together on one DS card.
Oh, retail release.
And, you know, sell that for the standard $40 square price for DS games, which would be about what it's going to cost you on WiiWare if you get everything. And to me, that would be a pretty good package and a pretty smart business decision. I don't know if it's being considered, but I think that's more likely than a downloadable version of it for DS, or DSi.
I could see them releasing it on DS, as a DS cartridge, if they hadn't already released it in a couple formats in Japan. Because I think that's where they feel like they'd probably get their most out of that particular release.
Mm-hmm. Well, so apparently I heard this recently, I think on the Grind, which is it was a replacement for one episode for Retronauts, where they just talked about RPGs. But I think they were saying that Matrix Software actually developed The After Years. And as we said recently, they're also working on Final Fantasy Gaiden and Nostalgia and Final Fantasy Legend 2 for DS. So they've really got a lot of stuff going on. So, All right. Greg has the next letter.
Yeah, so this is from the same person that didn't give his or her name last week.
The Nameless.
In an email that we read. So apparently willingly wishes to be known as the Unnamed. Writes, I'm 21 years old and grew up with the NES.
I know
the
too
Super
much.
NES, Genesis, Dreamcast, N64. You might be able to narrow it down. Dreamcast, N64, etc. But I'm getting tired of this uninspired generation. I'm the unhappy owner of an Xbox 360 for 2 years. It's the only system I own, and I desperately want a Wii, but I'm a poor college student and can't afford one. I constantly get jealous when I see games like Mario Galaxy, Mad World, Deadly Creatures, No More Heroes, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, Metroid, etc. What do you guys think of this current generation of games? Why does everything have to be so post-apocalyptic? Has imagination gone? Certainly the colour has. Have games become easier? Is Mario Galaxy as awesome as I've heard? That's quite a lot of questions, actually. Yeah.
I think anybody who has a 360 notices there's a lot of gray and brown in their games, definitely.
I think a lot of that comes down to the Unreal Engine, which is...
Yeah, which is so overused now.
Yeah, very prominent on that system.
That's the whole thing. I mean, and the fact that the prominent games on that system are in that style. So, I mean, you know, Gears of War, Call of Duty 4. You know, on the PS3, Killzone 2, Call of Duty 4. Just the big games, and the fact that kind of the whole first-person shooter genre is now, along with Madden sports games, is, you know, so high profile now.
There's plenty of examples of more vibrant games on those consoles, like Prince of Persia and Mirror's Edge. And
Viva Pinata.
Ratchet and Clank.
Yeah, and I'm blanking.
Little Big Planet.
That's what I was going for, Little Big Planet, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so it's probably not as bad as you think, but I guess it is just those prominent ones that tend to colour people's perceptions, but we're working somewhat backwards. First of all, I would say that Mario Galaxy probably is as awesome as you've heard, depending on how awesome you've heard it is.
Well, I want to know John's answer to this.
Mario Galaxy?
I think John probably relatively uneducated on this.
No, I mean, Mario Galaxy...
But you're getting farther into it, right?
The thing is, yeah, I mean, I have never said that it's a bad game or anything.
No, I mean, you still haven't played very much of it, right?
No, I'm about... I think I'm like 25 or 27 stars into it. So I'm just past the point where you open up the storybook that you can read about Rosalina. Yeah, I mean, it definitely gets better. I mean, I just found like the first like 10 to 15 stars just so slow, because I just found it really hard to get into, because the thing is they really don't start to open up the designs of the of each stage very much until you get maybe past 20. Then you start seeing like the real cool stuff where, you know, you drop into a stage and you're like, wow, this is really neat, because up to that point it just seems like each stage is kind of confined.
I mean, it's a little slow, but I mean, compared to some games nowadays, it really isn't that slow. I mean, Twilight Princess, I mean, the start of that is excruciating.
Oh, God.
That's slow.
It's like 10 hours.
Mario's like
really
a Ferrari by comparison.
Yeah.
but it does continue to get better. And indeed, you know, the stars beyond which you would have to collect, you know, the ones that you would only get if you were going for all of them, mm-hmm. you know, some of those are really good as well. Although some of them are kind of a bit treading some of the same ground as well.
Yeah.
But in general, I would say yes. I mean, it's fully deserving of its praise because it is so imaginative. And as this unnamed person appears to, kind of likes to harken back to, you know, the more pure imagination, pure gameplay of generations past, Mario Galaxy is probably the best expression of that in the past two console generations.
Yeah, I would
say
so.
And you know, that's why I was a little... I mean, I'm happy they're making a Mario Galaxy 2, but...
I still can't wrap my head around
that.
It's such a strange thing to announce, and... Mm-hmm. I guess they haven't shown very much of it at all, and they haven't talked about it much at all, but I'm having a hard time seeing myself playing this. Like, what is it going to be like? Because Nintendo just doesn't make sequels like that.
No.
Not typically. As I said before on this topic, the closest thing I could think of it is Super Mario World and Super Mario 3. But even that, obviously, there was this huge technical leap, which kind of made things different, you know, because it was 16-bit graphics, 16-bit sound. It kind of masked the fact that they were very similar games.
Yeah.
Which, obviously, this won't. I mean, it'll still look lovely, because the first one did. But, I mean, I think they say that they just had too many sort of... They thought, essentially, there was too much mileage in the ideas that they still had to not do it. It was kind of...
We're too good!
Yeah, that they hadn't gone far enough with some of the things. And, you know, the one area which I kind of can see that is that, as we kind of said, it does kind of start a bit slow, a bit simple, and it's never that difficult. Mm-hmm. Or not so much difficult, but advanced.
You know, there are a couple there are several stars, actually, I think are extremely difficult.
Yes, but I would agree.
Yeah, but I think there's what the point is, the gameplay at times is not as advanced as it could be in terms of, like, you know, you've got this whole thing of, like, little planetoids and physics and mm-hmm. puzzles, and, you know, it doesn't get into that very much.
Yeah.
And there probably is quite a lot of potential there. And certainly, if you listen to the rhetoric from Reggie, Fils-Aimé, and Miyamoto and all, that's what they're saying. They're saying this game is made for people who've played the first one, people who will be older by then if they were, you know, quite young when they played the first one, or just Mario fans.
It's a bizarre rationale.
Well, you know, it's
well, that is precise. That is pretty much an exact quote from Miyamoto. Isn't
yeah,
it, you know?
That's just so. That's so weird. Well, when this game came out back in 2007, they were but babes. Well,
but there is, there
but
is
now they're full grown adults.
They were twinkles in their parents' eyes.
I don't know about you, but I mean, there was a very, very significant progression that I would have had as a gamer from being 7 years old to 9 years old.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, I mean, that
I guess
happen.
So.
But I mean, so I think that sense that it's going to just take it further, do more. I think it's very much sounds like something made for me.
Well,
which,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to turn down.
I mean, I'm excited about it. I'm a little concerned about if it's still going to feel as imaginative.
It's not going to feel as imaginative.
No.
I mean, I'm sure it will have a lot of imaginative things in it, but in terms of, like, the concept and the premise and all that, I mean, you can't pull the same trick twice in that sense.
Yeah.
You just won't.
We talked about this being kind of a similar Super Mario World situation, but actually it's in the respect of the gameplay is really similar, but in respect of reusing the same game and engine, it's closer to Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask.
Yeah.
But those are so different.
I strongly doubt it'll be that different.
No, I kind of wish it were, I guess.
But, I mean, I don't know whether Mario is quite as flexible in some ways.
To a certain extent, you have to platform.
If you're going to do anything to kind of make it feel fresher, just some of these structural things, you know, perhaps, you know, perhaps make it, if you're targeting a more experienced players, or, like, you're not feeling so bothered about catering to everyone or catering to first-time players or whatever, make more of a learning curve out of it rather than this kind of scattershot, do whatever you feel like until you get to 60.
I have a feeling that there's at least one big feature of Galaxy 2 that we haven't heard about yet.
Hope there is, and
I think there will be, and I think there will be. The co-star mode of the first one was kind of this unsung hero. I mean, apparently a lot of people really enjoyed that.
Really?
It's not something that any of us would probably use, but I've heard a lot of people say that they really liked playing that with their kids or whatever.
I can see
and
that.
I have a feeling that it seems like the kind of thing Miyamoto would be very highly encouraged by. And it's something they've been messing around with since Tingle on Wind Waker.
Yeah,
and,
Tingle,
you know, it's
Tuna,
been around
for
a long time. And I think they might really take it up a notch and say, especially with the multiplayer Mario platforming with New Super Mario Bros. Wii, I think Galaxy 2 has a chance of having a substantial two-player mode.
I think you're right.
Do you think maybe even so far as two characters on screen at the same time?
Yes.
I think so.
I think Mario and Luigi playing together
in complementary
is
roles,
a real possibility.
Like use one to get somewhere with the help of the other, or just, like,
yeah,
competitive?
Yeah, I'm not silly enough to think this would be online with Wii Speak
or
anything.
I don't think it would work with lag.
But regardless, I think local co-op, basically, with Luigi probably playing a subdued role, this would be more like, you know, he has fewer abilities, he can't go off camera, you know, or something like that. I mean, he has kind of a limited... I think they'll find a way to do it, but I think taking the idea of having a parent and a child, or an older brother and a younger brother playing the game together, but in a more active way than co-star of just pointing at the screen.
I could see it in a supplementary capacity, but it would still very much remain that. I think you could rest assured of that.
I mean, I think they'll have to do something to prevent it from feeling like a track pack, you know? There has to be some big reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing is it definitely looks like some cool, like, some of these new powers and the items and things like that. You've seen the drill.
The drill, that was cool.
And Yoshi is a big addition that could be game-changing.
Yeah.
If they handle it better than
Sunshine.
It looks
like Yoshi has his own power, so it's like, okay, so if he eats this sort of thing, he becomes super fast. If he eats this sort of thing, he can float.
As long as he doesn't dissolve when you get in the water or, you know, crazy shit.
There's point of functionality for his tongue already.
Yeah, that could be very cool.
And therefore, maybe like for eggs and shooting and things, there's a lot that they can do.
Yeah, I mean, typically, you know, the typical Nintendo, you know, philosophy is, you know, we'll wow you in different ways other than, yeah, you know, making the graphic engine look better or something like that. So
yeah,
there'll be some kind of gameplay twist on there where you'll just be like, holy crap. You know, that's kind of what I'm waiting for.
And you just start to think, if you've got a development cycle that's been liberated from a lot of the technical sort of foundations and stuff,
yeah.
You know, let's have it be, you know, let's not have repeating bosses. Let's not have, you know, some of these, no. Like the comet stuff.
There's no excuse for it.
It's content, design, you know, level design, boss design, enemy design, power-up design, all the creative stuff that you really care about is the total focus of it.
They actually said we could release this game this year if we wanted to. I mean, so there's really no excuse.
Exactly. I mean, Galaxy was great and all that. It certainly felt less padded than Sunshine. Mm-hmm. But there was still padding going on. Yeah. You still fought the same Bowser a few times. You still fought two versions of just about every boss in the game.
The comet that made you have to play the level faster.
The one that made me find 100 purple coins on the B stage can go fuck itself.
I mean, that's the thing, because so many of the great thing about some of those purple coins is that they were not anything like the old find 100 coins, because they were in a tight area and it was just like a platform challenge. And then, there was the odd one that was exactly like the old ones.
where's the son of a bitch?
And it's just like that to me is padding. That's making it up to an arbitrary 120. Mm-hmm. And that's all the sort of stuff that now in the second one, you can say, well, we don't have to burden ourselves with that, you know, because you don't have to adopt that structure and you're not pushed for time because you spent so long building the graphics engine. So that's kind of what I'm hoping for is to see it. You know, all the same sort of flair, but just completely unconstrained by all these kind of artificial things that would have been acting on it in the first place.
Well, one last prediction. You know, the same development studio behind the Galaxy series, sub-series, made Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, and I think Donkey Kong will show up in Galaxy 2.
Really?
he's showing up in a few places.
It would be awesome.
But I mean, what about the broader question about the generation? I mean, obviously, I'm still just with a Nintendo machine, so my perspective on this is somewhat narrower than yours.
I would say at this point, last generation, I owned about 65 games. And I would say that my collection felt more diverse than the collection I own now, which is probably only at about 35.
Okay, well, you would expect that, though.
But, I mean, it's not just that I've bought less games, it's that I feel like there's been less variety of things to acquire. It's not a monetary constraint as to why I have as few games as I do. It's more of a choice.
I have so far fewer Wii games than I do GameCube games. But part of it is that I have an Xbox now, so it's dividing up my more divided in terms of what I can spend my money on. And the other thing is I've bought so many more DS games than I ever bought for GBA.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. Yeah. My DS collection is massive, and they're all games I love. The DS is just a crazy how many, the library is so sick on it.
If you widen out consideration of the generation to the portable space, I mean, it's difficult to have any grumbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the DS has been so good.
They've gone forward while the other stuff's taken a step back in terms of just how diverse and colorful and variety there is.
Well, maybe some of it is because there's a direct link between that in terms of, you know, people perceive that certain things are better suited to the handheld space, and they've kind of been more proactively sort of redirecting their, you know, really creative efforts to that. Because the thing about GBA is it was nice and all that, but I mean, it was quite an uncreative generation. There was so many simply 16-bit games, or that were so strongly derived from those games.
Well, I would say like 70% of the Game Boy's games, including the GBA, are like action-adventure, side-scrolling licensed games. I mean, there's just so much of them
so
out there.
Whereas the DS, you know, there's so much more that's original. There's so much more that, you know, it's not really resembles either. Well, it may do visually, but in terms of gameplay, it may not particularly resemble something that came out of the 16-bit era or whatever. You know, so I think that may well be some of it. There's just been a reallocation of, you know, what do you do? If you're doing something on consoles, what you do is, you know, you compete with the quote-unquote AAA space where, you know, you've got to tick all the boxes about online, about, you know, the graphical engine, about, you all this sort of
thing. The feature sets. You got to check off all your little boxes and put the icons on the back.
Well, the thing is now, I mean, you have so many different platforms that what you... I mean, in the past, right, especially, I mean, with 16-bit, there were really... At any one time, there were really only two platforms that people were really making games for. You know, one that was either really, really healthy, one was, you know, kind of nipping at its heels.
Yeah.
And the thing is, what you had is that if any platform that you had, there was always a wide variety of games for that platform, because really there was always just one market leader. And so, like, if even up to the PS2, I mean, the PS2 had all kinds of games, and you never heard any complaints about, oh, well, the PS2 only has, you know, these kind of Doom-style post-apocalyptic games, because it had everything, because everybody was making games for it.
PS2 really lacked good platformers, but then that whole generation...
The whole generation did.
It was very weird. Mm-hmm. And this generation hasn't exactly been great in that.
No, I mean, you know, it's not as if Galaxies, which has sold very well, has sold some, like, nearly 9 million copies at this point, hasn't spurred some great renaissance in 3D platformers, or in that case, its sequel is perhaps more welcome than otherwise would have been.
Well, that's a good point.
The thing is now, though, with all these different platforms, it's that... You'll find that game companies are now, like you guys said, they're tailoring games to the hardware, right? So if you want that 16-bit style of RPG, it's on the DS. If you want a first-person shooter, well, you know, it's on 360 or PS3. You know, if you want a Mario game, it's on the Wii. There is no, I mean, everything is so spread out.
I suppose the other thing you have to say, in terms of this shift from handheld, from console to handheld, however you want to look at it, it really has happened in Japan in the most tangible sense, in terms of console sales, especially in, you know, if you're leaving aside the Wii, are in the toilet. I mean, whereas people just don't seem to care terribly much, even though the 360 is not a big factor. The PS3 hasn't been a big success, so, you know, for whatever reason, the old strategies there really have ceased to work. So there probably has been a very direct, you know, on a financial basis, our developers will focus more on, you know, handheld platforms and things. Mm-hmm. So if you're someone who liked the sort of the Japanese, you know, developed games of the past, a lot of those people, that general style of development isn't going on the consoles. It is more Western dominated, because those are the people that are actually buying those systems and buying games for them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, that we really salvaged that discussion.
Did we cover all the questions that he asked?
That and much more, I think.
I don't even know we got to all of his concerns, which is kind of funny.
Okay, so John has the next email.
All right, next one. Insano Lord writes, if Golden Phoenix can make a shout-out, so can I. Despite having a truly awful name and an even worse story, Chu Man Fu is a really fun action puzzle game that really deserved more support than it got, especially with our beloved dictator, John Lindemann, slamming it in the thread not once but multiple times at every chance he got. I recommend everyone try it.
I recommend
that everybody completely ignore it.
John, slam the game.
Have you actually played it, John?
No.
I don't have to play it to slam it. I'm the fucking director.
Oh, here it is.
It's called Chu Man Fu.
I've heard a lot of good things about Chu Man Fu. Hey, I really have.
I just remember having terrible box art, so... And it's a terrible graphics game, so therefore it is instantly judged in my mind.
It looks like Lolo or Kickle Cubicle, which are both really good puzzle games, sort of action puzzle games, top down in that style.
I've heard one bad thing about Chu Man Fu, and that is it's called Chu Man Fu.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure this is from this podcast and many, many episodes ago, that, you know, it just is so much better than its name, which isn't the most profoundly complimentary thing ever. I mean, that is an appalling name.
It really is.
At what point was that acceptable? 1950?
Yeah. mean,
And it's not like the name came from Japan. They renamed it for Western markets to Chu Man Fu.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Preposterous. But I do actually think there are people this is a game with merit in it. So, you know, if you can...
Would you guys judge Choaniki based on its name?
No. All right.
What a mistake that would be.
Since you brought up Choaniki, I've got something to share with you. Now, we've been making fun of Choaniki for a long time now. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've really gone beyond the one that's on Virtual Console. But we've been making fun of the wrong game.
Oh, the fighting game? Please tell me you're talking about the fighting game.
Not even quite. YouTube.
No.
Choaniki and the Saturn.
Oh.
And the things you will see will leave you forever changed. So,
Oh, I can't wait.
Oh my good gracious God. It is unfathomable.
All right. So there's your comment on Chu Man Fu. James has the final email.
So Andrew from Milwaukee writes, "Hey guys, I'm a pretty big fan of the show, and I always look forward to your new business segment so that I can learn about some hidden gems that I may have overlooked. You know, like chariot racing."
You're saying we're not current?
Like Chu Man Fu.
You're saying we're not into what the kids are playing these days?
It's California games, that's what the kids like, isn't it?
What games are the kids talking about on the street?
Yeah, California games, man. It's huge. Kids in the old
folks
home.
Keep going, John. Keep rolling.
I'm done.
Oh, nice. Anyway, I'm curious if any of you have ever personally encountered problems with the VC downloads or have had stories similar to mine from other games. I recently downloaded Adventure Island, and I was extremely disappointed when there appears to be a glitch that will not go away. I had a different glitch problem with Sonic 2 on the Sega Genesis. However, I deleted the game and re-downloaded it, and the glitch was fixed. I'm kind of hesitant to download VC games now, and as I have initially said, I'm curious if this is an isolated case or there are more stories like mine exist. Do you think I should somehow contact Nintendo directly and alert them of this problem? What was the glitch?
Yeah, I had to edit it out. It was very convoluted. There's a glitch late in the game, like World 8-3, and this is the NES version, by the way. There are like 5 different versions of Adventure Island on Virtual Console and WiiWare. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately with emulation, sometimes there are very odd little glitches, and Virtual Console is some of the best emulation I've ever seen.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. In my experience, it's impeccable. I mean, I've downloaded a huge amount of games, yeah, and I've never encountered a problem.
Yeah, it's not complete. I mean, I would say that this glitch might be in the original version. I'm not sure how familiar Andrew is with the NES version of Adventure Island, but if it's a gameplay glitch like this, my guess is that there's a pretty high probability that's actually correctly emulated from the glitch in the original game, but it is possible that there could be an emulation error, and I would say yes, email Nintendo, because and email Hudson about it, especially. Hudson's actually more likely to respond. Mm. And tell them about it, because as you've seen with Sonic 2, it is possible to patch Virtual Console games. It's happened with several of them, actually, including Star Fox 64, which had some control issues on the classic controller. So it is possible to adjust these, and what they do is, and that's why it helped when you re-downloaded Sonic 2, is that whatever glitch that you had, they had already fixed it and had uploaded a new version. So when you went back and downloaded it over again, you actually got a different version that had that problem fixed. So I know he's tried this with Adventure Island, didn't fix it, so you know, you need to let the companies know, and there's a chance they might go in there and take care of it, you know, and then you can download the new version, it'll be fixed. So I think it's worth reporting.
Well, yeah. And I suppose regardless of its origin, if it is a problem, they may have heard from people before and therefore just be able to tell you based on that before, you know, what it actually is the problem.
Yeah, I would check the
complaints that they're that they need to get before they seriously investigate something like this. So I would say, yeah, go ahead and tell them. All right, thanks everyone for the great letters. Again, you can send your letter to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Other ways to interact with the show, of course, Retroactive is ongoing, and we just finished up Ninja Spirit. Now we're going to move on to Super Nintendo with the next poll. The nominees are Super Mario World, ActRaiser, Ogre Battle March of the Black Queen,
yes,
Donkey Kong Country 2, Legend of the Mystical Ninja,
yes,
and Super Mario RPG. We had so many great suggestions in the forum threads that I couldn't keep it down to the usual 5. So you have 6 choices this time. I'll probably have 2 runners up that move on to the second chance poll in a couple months. So it's going to be hard to make a decision with that group. I mean, they're really all worthwhile, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have these polls, because it's hard for us to decide. So you guys get to make the decision for us. So go to the forums, to the podcast section, find the poll, vote in the poll. You have until Thursday, let's say August 6th. Thursday, August 6th, I think, is when the poll is set to shut down. And we'll record an episode on that day and announce the winner. So jump in there. And as far as you guys, Greg, James, and John, that's your deadline too. And if you don't vote by then,
I haven't had any problem making deadlines, unlike some people.
Yes, yes. So these guys, I don't want to hear complaints about the
results.
I've
already voted, and it's inevitable that I will lose. But I voted anyway because honestly, I don't want to play Super Mario RPG or Super Mario World.
Yeah,
I
have a policy that I only vote in polls in which Choaniki is one of the selections. So
you can go at it. I mean, we may have to
opt out of the democratic process this time.
Yeah, it's remarkable that Choaniki never showed up on Super Nintendo.
They would have taken the blood out of it.
There was a Choaniki game on Super Nintendo.
There was.
Really?
And it's just not on a virtual console anymore.
I can't wait.
That's retroactive. Please go vote, and the results will be announced in a couple weeks. Also want to let you know to check out the other podcasts on the Nintendo World Report Network, because not only do we have the fantastic Radio Trivia Podcast Edition with TYP and rotating cast of co-hosts.
Myself actually coming up, and it's... an episode. I'll put it that way.
it is an episode.
Really selling it there, James. Bravo. Yeah.
It was a very odd episode to record, so it could be good just for that.
Okay. We also have a new, at least an experiment for another podcast hosted by Neil Ronahan, and I think he's going to be bringing in various news writers for that, and it's tentatively called NWR Newscast. And we probably don't have a feed for it at the time that you're listening to this, but go to the website and find the article and check it out. I haven't even heard it myself yet, but I'm excited to go do that. So, just keep in mind that's a very seat-of-the-pants kind of thing. It'll probably change a lot over the first two or three episodes as they find their way. It's been quite a while, a couple years, since we started a new podcast for the website. So it's going to be really fun to see how those guys find their footing. But it's nice because, you know, we don't cover a whole lot of breaking news on Radio Free Nintendo. So if you want to get your podcast news on a more regular basis, I think that'll be a good option. So check that out. And James wanted to pimp one last thing before we go.
Well, in order to celebrate the release of Wii Sports Resort, which is undoubtedly Nintendo's biggest game this summer, Nintendo World Report has decided to have a contest to give away a copy of the game or also some other yet-to-be-determined prizes for readers who are willing to embarrass themselves in image format or video format to show us how they celebrate the summer with gaming. So you can go to the website and get all the rules for that. It's got a nice headline right at the top. So we just call it NWR Summer Contest. So entries are due the 1st of August. All the rules are up there, the description of what we expect. So obviously we'd want as many entries as possible. And the winners will be voted on by our readers. So go ahead and get your entries in quickly, and good luck with the contest.
Yeah, and I would just say that it seems like the past few contests we've had very low participation.
Yes.
And so... pretty much if you entered at all, you had a very good chance of winning something.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this will have a higher level of participation, but it is not a random drawing. It's not like you have a crappy chance of winning. You know, it'll be judged, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So you really should take the initiative and put this in, because we're going to have some cool prizes. And really, if you take any time at all to think about your entry, you're probably doing better than a lot of other people, and so you have a good chance, right?
Yeah,
so,
based on our forum feedback, the first request was, can we do a picture storyboard of harassing GameSpot employees?
Wow, that sounds great. I don't want to prejudge, but that sounds really good.
Yeah, I kind of wish I could enter, because I came up with a pretty good idea, but I'm disqualified at about 7 levels with this contest.
Yeah.
Me, both a staff member and its organizer.
All right. So that's going to be the end of the show. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week. Have a good summer. Enjoy Wii Sports. Bye.
Bye.
Later.
So long.
This is the one with the digitized graphics.
Oh, yes!
Oh, good man. God.
How about it? 3, 2, 1, play.
Go. Awesome. Oh, yes!
Wow. What?
This guy's on pogo sticks of men? They're flying with their hair.
Oh, nice.
Whoa. This is some Target Terror shit.
It is. I like the music.
Yeah, really.
What are those power-ups? They look like...
That's the protein, I think.
I really like in the background the Sistine Chapel guy sitting there.
Oh, I know. It's such defilement.
Is that,
wait,
is that
the
a
boss.
Flying head?
The boss is where it really gets fun.
I'm
really.
Sure.
The guy's carrying like a machine gun. That's so out of place.
It is.
The pogoing is pretty obscene.
Yeah, a little bit.
It is. It's like something you'd see in Caligula.
Wah! Wah! I like the statues. Oh, what the hell?
Oh, no.
John Lindemann just appeared.
It begins.
And he's speaking Japanese.
Oh, wild John Lindemann has appeared.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
Holy shit.
Is it, this looks
what
like, this looks like Baron Harkonnen.
What are those black things he's kicking at
you? And he's like farting out.
Yeah,
here.
The fun hasn't even started yet.
The alien.
Oh, he's aroused. That is not good.
Yeah, it definitely looks like he's just holding that over
this
his junk.
Is it.
Look at his face.
What the fuck? Oh my God. Oh my God. Use the man beam on that shit.
Seriously.
Kill it with fire.
Oh no. Oh no, his head.
Holy shit. I don't think sprite scaling and rotation were ever meant to be used for this purpose.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
He's getting aroused again. Oh no, it's
over.
Oh,
that's it. That's the end of the... Well, you get to see some stupid images.
Oh no!
Oh,
man, no!